happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup. And yes, we have found the gay angles on Ukraine. Not that we're not concerned about the whole thing and nuclear annihilation.
Indeed.
But it turns out that Ukrainian LGBTQ activists fought and captured AWOL Russian soldiers. Unbelievable. And other Ukrainian soldiers have killed a Chechen general who is one of the chief architects of the torture and murder of LGBTQ people in Chechnya. We'll also tell you how to help LGBTQ Ukrainians fleeing Putin's war and anti-LGBTQ death squads.
In Texas, which is almost as bad as Chechnya these days, Governor Abbott ordered a criminal investigation of parents getting gender-affirming medical care for their transgender children. Families with trans kids are terrified, and they're leaving Texas. ACLU and Lambda are suing.
It's a horrible situation. And Florida is going full steam ahead, passing anti-LGBTQ legislation. Also, Arizona, Georgia, Indiana, and Alabama.
Biden's pick for the U.S. Supreme Court. Good for the gays?
You know, it's a heavy news week when the black woman nominated for the U.S. Supreme Court is our fourth headline. After 122 years, the U.S. House passes anti-lynching legislation.
New York LGBTQ activists rallied to demand that Mayor Eric Adams rescind his appointments of anti-LGBTQ pastors to his administration.
And here's a lovely story. A teenager in Illinois tried to kill his neighbor for being gay.
Transgender pioneer Rusty May Moore, who turned her home into a residence for homeless trans people, has died.
She was quite the hero. At the Screen Actor Guild Awards, an out LGBTQ woman of color won for the first time.
And our guest at the end of our show is actor, writer, composer, singer, and sex worker David Pevsner, our old pal, on his new book, Damn Shame, a memoir of desire, defiance, and show tunes.
It is quite a book.
There it is.
I gobbled up every word of it.
But we start in the Ukraine, and we'll start with a somewhat encouraging story. LGBTQ Ukrainians captured a group of AWOL Russian soldiers who were hiding in the basement in Kharkiv. It turned out to be the office of the local LGBTQ group. The Russians hadn't figured that out. An activist, Viktor Pylypenko, said, that's him, "We are confronting a tyrannical, homophobic enemy." And they're fighting.
This guy, I mean, it's crazy that these Russians were hiding out in the basement of the gay center. And you know, those gay men, they're not sitting still for anything. And they just went in and grabbed them.
They fought with them and grabbed them.
Yeah, we're very, very, very proud of them.
We're not happy, I think, about anybody's death, but this one tempts us.
I think my note here says that LGBTQ soldiers fought in the Crimea conflict in 2014, and that's one reason they're prepared and stepping forward now. So they are experienced, battle-hardened soldiers who have been through this before with the Russian army.
All right. So the top Chechen general. Now, Chechnya is an area that Russia decided they wanted to control. And by the way, they killed the Russians killed 250,000 Chechens in the process of taking that over, which does not encourage me in this situation. But no. The top general there, Magomed Tushayev, was killed by Ukrainian defenders. He was the right-hand man, of the infamous Chechen leader, Ramzan Kadyrov, yes, and was installed by Russia there, Tushayev was part of a kill squad sent to target Ukrainian officials, especially President Zelensky. And some people think that LGBTQ activists were on that list as well. We're not sure. But back in Chechnya, he was one of the leaders of the anti-gay purge back there.
He was a top government official responsible for the rounding up, torturing, and killing of gay men mostly, some lesbians too, in Chechnya over the past few years, then got assigned to this action in Ukraine as part of the Russian army, and he has now been killed. And
Peter Tatchell says, I don't celebrate anybody's death, but that's one less mass murderer on the loose.
Now, there is some debate over whether there is a specific LGBTQ kill list, as we mentioned last week. An official of Outright Action International says that those stories are exaggerated, but certainly they're going to target everyone who is not down with the Russian program.
We had a story about a trans woman this morning who was just afraid to leave her house because everybody's got guns and trans people, you know, even in...
Well, and she's afraid she can't cross the border, you know. Right. There are African students in Ukraine who are having trouble leaving the country because they're having trouble with Ukrainian officials.
But you mentioned Outright Action International, and they are, and people should look them up. They are one of the groups, along with Rainbow Railroad, who say they are aiding LGBTQ refugees from the Ukraine. We will have links to them for more information in our email.
By the way, I'm trying to be a little supportive. This is a blue top, but it's the wrong color blue. But it includes a little logo that has some yellow in it. So this is my failed attempt to be supportive.
Well, there was a support action. They've been all over the world. But at the Stonewall Inn, on February 26th, the solidarity action that included LGBTQ Ukrainians, that's Ivana Sakno and Polina Buchak, both from Kyiv, hugging there at the Stonewall Inn.
Now, there are reports that in Ukraine they're running out of medicines, including anti-HIV medicines. So if you're inclined to help with any of this, please do reach out to these organizations, which we will name in our weekly show note. If you're on our email list, go to gayusatv.org to get on that list. I was reminded that horrifying as all this is, and, you know, I'm concerned about nuclear weapons being launched. But one thing that's going to happen is if the Russians do succeed in taking over in Ukraine, they will impose their rules and laws, and that includes the no promo homo laws.
Absolutely.
The burgeoning freedom of LGBTQ people in Ukraine is going to be wiped out by Russian masters who will shut all that down.
Right. Now, around the world, arts organizations are cutting ties with Russian artists performers who are Putin supporters. That includes the Metropolitan Opera, who I think have canceled Gergiev. But I mean, let's remember.
Anna de Trebko.
Did they cancel her?
I think so.
I think she says she's against the war, but she hasn't condemned Putin. But
right.
Here's the deal. These are the people that Queer Nation, and you were very involved with this, protested in 2013 in the run-up to the Sochi Olympics when Putin was passing all these vicious anti-gay laws. And the Met Opera said, oh, no, they're artists. You know, we disagree with what's happening in Russia, but we're not going to do anything about it. And people actually, you know, disrupted performances of the opera to try to draw attention to it.
And Carnegie Hall, too. And I would say that we got some very decent press coverage, all of which is showing up again, I'm happy to say, as the New York Times Googles itself to find the pictures of those demos and repeat those charges. So it's nice to get credit, but come on.
The White House says they're engaged directly with especially vulnerable populations in the Ukraine, including LGBTQ people specifically, trying to help them with emergency assistance for relocation, medical expenses, other unexpected costs. They understand in the White House that LGBTQ people are targets.
Yeah, as are any who are seen as dissidents or outside the mainstream by the Russians. Well, it's tremendously depressing and scary and horrible, and we're enormously sympathetic to everybody in that area.
And it's enormously scary and horrible in Texas. The vicious Governor Abbott, who won his primary yesterday in Texas to run, he'll be facing Beto O'Rourke, although he's leading in the polls 52-45 down there. Anyway, he issued an order at the behest of basically Ken Paxton, who is the horrible attorney general.
Let's take one step backwards. He tried to get the legislature to pass a law that would outlaw medical care, any gender-affirming medical care for trans kids, and to criminalize the parents for supplying that. The legislature refused to pass that law, and that's when he stepped up and issued these basically executive orders, ordering the Attorney General and the Department of Family and Protective Services to go after these parents anyway.
Well, he likened gender-affirming care to child abuse. And so he wrote to the state agencies saying doctors, nurses, teachers, and anyone who comes into contact with a child is required to report parents who get care for their trans children or face criminal penalties. And he started in on this. And the first person they went after is a woman who works for one of the state agencies who has a trans child. And she is now being represented, I believe, by the ACLU in a lawsuit against this action. And five district attorneys in Texas say, we're not going to enforce this thing.
Well, because it's unconstitutional, because they say that the governor's efforts and Attorney General Paxton are illegal, that what they're trying to do is actually against the law. And that's why the ACLU and Lambda Legal have gone into court this week in defense of this woman who went to her bosses at the Department of Family and Protective Services and says, I'm just trying to get a little clarity here. I have a trans child who is getting gender-affirming care. You know, what's the situation? And they put her on leave and started an investigation with an eye towards prosecuting her for this.
Well, look, families there with trans kids are literally fleeing, trying to move, if they can, to states which will welcome them, like California. One said, we're desperate to keep our trans kids alive and healthy and happy. One mom said that they live in constant fear in Texas and they want to live where the law protects them. One of those kids is Sonny Bryant, a third grader from Houston, 8 years old, a trans activist. There she is with her mom. She was invited virtually to the State of the Union by the local Texas representative there, Sylvia Garcia. She has testified, little girl, has testified repeatedly to stop anti-trans legislation and mobilized other trans kids and mobilized other teachers and administrators. We all have to stand up for them.
She's 8 years old, and she started working on this as an activist at four. So for those who say, oh, they don't know who they are, four. Now, they're getting support from all over, including the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, which at their recent game in Texas, where they beat Iceland, were wearing armbands, little wristbands there, saying protect trans kids. And the team says, this team is different. We speak out, we care about people, and we're going to support people. They also recommended, and we do too, that if you want information about this and what you can do, contact Equality Texas, which is the statewide organization, which is given very high marks by locals in Texas. You can find them at equalitytexas.org, and highly recommend that you take a look at what they're up to and what you find out what you can do. But also, it wasn't just the soccer team.
Also, speaking up for trans kids and all of us was President of the United States Joe Biden at the State of the Union message last night as we tape.
And folks, for our LGBTQ plus Americans, let's finally get the Bipartisan Equality Act to my desk. The onslaught of state laws targeting transgender Americans and their families, it's simply wrong. And I said last year, especially to our younger transgender Americans, I'll always have your back as your president so you can be yourself and reach your God-given potential.
Thank you, President Biden. By the way, before we leave Texas, we should say that there were 24 LGBTQ candidates in the primaries yesterday who won their races. Florida?
All right. So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, all right. A lot of attention to Florida this week. The Republican House passed the Don't Say Gay in School bill, which prohibits any discussion of sexuality or gender identity between K through 3 or in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students according to state standards. This requires parental notification, quote, if there is a change in the student's services or monitoring related to the student's mental, emotional, or physical health or well-being, and the school's ability to provide a safe and supportive learning environment for the student. So the school can withhold from parents if they believe that disclosing would result in abuse, abandonment, or neglect. But just 7 Republicans voted against it. It passed 69-47. It goes to the state Senate. Students plan a walkout on March 3rd at noon across the state to protest this. 150 corporations signed something objecting to it, of course, but they're the same people mostly who fund these anti-LGBTQ legislators, so I'm sick of it. And then they also passed something called the anti-woke legislation, which basically forbids private businesses and schools from doing, you know, consciousness raising around race issues and gender identity issues. And
teaching history, teaching accurate history.
It might make people uncomfortable.
Right.
I mean, talk about snowflakes and talk about cancel culture.
Well, frankly, I'm thrilled that 7 Republicans in the House did vote against these bills. I think that's more than we're going to get in the U.S. Congress. But thank you to them. And a Senate, it does move to the Senate. A Senate committee earlier this week already passed it. So now we're at the full Senate awaiting their vote, and we're not very optimistic.
This is all you're going to hear about from Republicans from now on. They're going to want to put cameras in classrooms everywhere so parents can watch while their kids are being taught. They want all curricula posted on the Internet so they can pick it over and object.
I think teachers are just going to quit en masse.
They are. They're already quitting.
It's also not a coincidence that Governor Abbott in Texas pulled all this trans kids stuff a week before the election. This is their 2022 version of how they're going to scare people into voting Republican.
And he's thinking of running for president.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Look, the Republicans are just tripping all over themselves to use us as scapegoats on their way to the White House.
It doesn't feel very good.
Never has, never will. But yes, we're taping on Wednesday. Tomorrow, Thursday, is the scheduled student walkout. I hope every student in Texas walks out.
Central time. In Arizona, they advanced bills targeting LGBTQ youth. One bans best medical practice medical care for trans youth. A House bill required health care providers and school staff to expose LGBTQ plus children to their parents. If parents don't get records, they can sue.
Since when are parents interested in schools? They gave that up years ago.
You go to the parent-teacher meetings? Well, they all do now. All right.
Well, I did as a lesbian parent in the 1980s. I was going to schools as a parent to parent-teacher conferences.
In Georgia, the Senate passed a ban on trans athletes from playing on teams aligned with their gender identity. It allows lawsuits versus school districts that will not discriminate in this way. It goes to the House.
I really don't think most parents will get involved in this stuff. Just the crazies who have lost their minds, like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert screaming at the president in the State of the Union address last night. But just those few crazies are going to have a huge impact.
In Indiana, the legislature gave final approval to a bill that would ban trans girls from participating in school sports that match their gender identity, K through 12. It doesn't stop trans boys from playing boy sports. It goes to Governor Eric Holcomb's desk. But the bill to ban critical race theory and related concerns, concepts, K through 12, was killed. A teacher testified, we're not impartial on Nazism. But the chief sponsor of the bill responded to that, a guy named Scott Baldwin. He said he believed teachers should be impartial on Nazism and all the isms. So the House passed it anyway, but the Senate panel cut down the number of exclusions about what you could teach. And then the right wing said, oh, this isn't enough for us to vote for. So they killed it.
All right. Are we done with these states for
yes.
the moment? We need to move on. I will add one other footnote here, just a digression. Fascinating new study out by a professor at Notre Dame, Joel Middleman, straight guy, who looked at a lot of studies of the achievement levels of straight, gay, lesbian students, boys, girls, different classes, and found that gay boys are more successful in school than straight boys. And he attributes this to the idea that gay boys are not afraid of having their masculinity challenged by being successful at school, where straight boys are more likely to say, you know, I'm not a real man if I achieve at school. And on the other hand, lesbian girls who are stereotyped as more masculine are less successful than straight girls because they are discriminated against and punished as more masculine presenting.
And yet they do all the firsts in society.
Exactly.
By the way, before we finish with all the culture wars, I'm sick of Hillary Clinton and Mike Bloomberg this week said, Democrats have to stop fighting the culture wars. It's going to kill us in November. They're making an excuse. It's the right wing that is ginning these things up. Please.
And we can't let them get away with it. All right, let's move on to the Supreme Court.
Sure.
And here we are, 23 minutes into the show, and finally getting to Ketanji Brown Jackson, whose nomination is a revolution in this country and a long overdue one in her nomination to be the first black woman nominated to the Supreme Court of the United
States. She would be joining a radically warped court, a 6-3 majority of far-right judges. She comes to the court with more public defense experience than any judge since Thurgood Marshall. She went to high school in Miami, Harvard College, Harvard Law. She clerked for a Clinton judge, a Reagan judge, and then for Stephen Breyer, who's stepping down.
Yeah.
She served on Obama's sentencing commission. Look, we don't have a lot of specifics around LGBTQ stuff. But, you know, all the LGBTQ groups are supporting her.
Her record of decisions is impeccable in terms of what we know. We're a little concerned about her having served on the organizing board of a Christian school and that had, of course, anti-same-sex marriage policies and pro-life policies. And her response that she didn't know about those is not very satisfying. But she also then said she didn't agree with everything the school did.
She has stood up for reproductive rights in her rulings, although by the time she reaches the court, there won't be any.
And I looked to see when she clerked for Breyer. It was between LGBTQ cases, after Romer v. Evans, before Lawrence v. Texas. So presumably she was not involved in any of that. But as I say, her record is impeccable.
And if you're worried about the world ending, the Supreme Court basically is going to stop President Biden from enforcing the Environmental Protection Act. Unless Congress becomes more specific. So that's screwed. The U.S. House this past week passed the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Bill Act, designating lynching as a hate crime under federal law. There have been 200 attempts to pass this since 1900. It's the reason the NAACP was formed back in the early 1900s. It passed 422-3 onto the Senate.
Yeah, we'll see where it gets there. Well, let's look at political news. In New York State, an activist, Anna Maria Archila, has been nominated to run for lieutenant governor with Jumaane Williams. You see her there in the middle of a demonstration. But she's most famous for having confronted Senator Jeff Flake in 2018 in a Senate elevator. What was she yelling at him about?
About Kavanaugh, and that's the demonstration that you see her being arrested for.
Right.
Trying to stop Kavanaugh from getting the Supreme Court.
It'd be nice.
She's originally from Columbia.
It'd be great to have her be the lieutenant governor of New York.
She was cited by Trump, who called her a very rude elevator screamer.
We've been following the progress of campaigns by LGBTQ candidates around the country and running some campaign videos. We will not show you the video of the Republican nominated Christina Nolan, who is running for Senate in Vermont. She is a former U.S. attorney for Vermont and an out lesbian, although you would not know that from looking at the video, which does not mention her longtime partner.
She will not say whether or not she voted for Trump.
She prosecuted Purdue Pharma, thank you, but she wants to end drug addiction by stopping safe injection sites, which is not a good...
And then you mentioned QAnon Republican Lauren Boebert of Colorado in the House. She has an out gay man seeking the Democratic nomination to oppose her. What is his name?
Him and 10 others.
The most vulgar ad imaginable, vividly declaring he is sick of her crap.
Yes, exactly. And he didn't use the word crap. But, you know, good on him. And local politics here in New York City, as you know, we've been mad at the new mayor, Eric Adams, for appointing anti-LGBTQ pastors to various city positions, commissions, whatever. We held a press conference and demonstration that last week.
Among those who spoke was Councilmember Crystal Hudson, who said, look, she's lesbian. She said, we're going to conduct oversight over these appointments to, you know, make sure that our rights are being protected. And then the new Pride agenda, Shayar Avery, said the mayor won't get away with this. She said that the mayor said, hey, I'm for gay rights, but it's a political detriment to me. I mean, you know, come on. And then Reverend Pat Bumgardner, a veteran in this community, who is a religious leader, who was called the three appointments an unholy trinity. So there's a lot of, and she said one of her members is from Uganda, which is one of the places praised for its anti-gay bigotry by Fernando Cabrera, who was given one of the appointments. And that person had to flee and leave his family and everything.
So as a result of all this pressure, the mayor has said he will meet with LGBTQ community members, but we have no confidence that he'll pick anyone to meet with who doesn't have some sympathy for him, or that any of this will get us anywhere.
And he won't get any credibility. All right, let's go to Alabama.
Yeah. A softball coach, Megan Billingsley Dees, 30 years old, has been arrested for sexual abuse of female members of her team, her softball team. She has been accused of sodomy, sexual abuse, enticing a minor. Not good. Not good for the gays, Megan.
No.
And then
in Illinois, a 19-year-old man, Ethan Dickerson, is being held on $1 million bail after an alleged attack on a gay neighbor in Decatur, Illinois, last Thursday.
60 years old, the neighbor.
He attacked the neighbor with a pipe, threatening to kill him. You know why I have to do this? You're gay. You're evil. I'm going to kill you. He faces charges of attempted first-degree murder, aggravated battery, home invasion, and a hate crime. The victim was found, in a pool of blood, multiple lacerations. He did survive, but he required a lot of stitches, and it was horrible.
Congratulations.
Where do people get these ideas that we're evil? Could it be Republicans?
Well, maybe they got them from that minor league baseball player, Brett Netzer, who the Red Sox have just released as a result of his racist, homophobic, and anti-Semitic tweets. Which ended by saying, release me. So I think he wanted off the team, and they obliged. Thank you for that. And then in Oklahoma, a judge has denied custody rights to the non-biological mother of a child of a lesbian couple. They're divorcing, and they're having a custody dispute, and they're married. They're married. And they had a child, and so now they're in court discussing custody. And the judge says, you didn't do anything to establish your parental rights. We got married! it's just insane. They're both on the birth certificate of the child. The Oklahoma Supreme Court, in a previous decision, had given parental rights to same-sex parents, but this judge is determined to just do what he wants.
Okay. All right, let's talk about some of the people we lost, primarily a trans activist named Rusty May Moore, born in 1941, with her partner, Chelsea Goodwin. They opened their home to homeless trans people in 1994 and called it Transy House, and that lasted until 2000 in Park Slope, Brooklyn. We'll link to a short documentary on
2008. That. 2008, I think it lasted till.
Oh, yeah?
95 to 2008.
Okay, sorry. Can't read my writing. They served hundreds of trans people over the years. Rusty had three children from a previous marriages, became an associate dean at Hofstra University, won a Fulbright scholarship, was a chairperson of the Metropolitan Gender Network, and active in the New York Association for Gender Rights Advocacy, and a real sweetheart.
My favorite anecdote is she was confronted by a youth gang that came after her one day with a baseball bat attacking her, and she confronted them and said, I'm a taxpayer, and I shouldn't have to put up with this.
We're all feeling that way these days. We also lost Leo Bersani, an out literary critic and theorist on gay life, has died at 90, best known for his writings on gay identity at the height of the AIDS crisis. He was sort of one of these queer theorists.
He was categorized that way, but a lot of his work was against queer theorists because he hated all the intense analysis. And he said, look, we don't have to understand everything. Why can't we just enjoy stuff and appreciate it? And he also believed in real sexual freedom. And and hated those in the AIDS epidemic who were more punitive and wanted to lay down all sorts of rules. And he was a real free thinker and someone who really appreciated the difference of gay life and the difference in gay men's relationships as opposed to straight relationships.
Spent most of his career at University of California at Berkeley. And then John Lauritsen died at the age of 83. This is a guy who joined the Gay Liberation Front right at Stonewall in 1969 and edited Come Out, the first post-Stonewall publication. He became active in Gay Activist Alliance and the Gay Academic Union, becoming their national director. And with David Thorstad, he co-authored in 1974 the early homosexual rights movement, 1864 to 1935, that uncovered a lot of our forgotten history. Unfortunately, he plunged into HIV denialism journalism at the New York Native, and, you know, really, that's not good.
Iconoclast, I guess. But certainly an important figure, and sorry to hear about his death.
Right.
All right. In international news, a court in Singapore has refused to overturn their sodomy law because they said no one enforces it and it's unenforceable. But we're going to let it stay on the books.
So you don't have standing because we're not enforcing the law,
yeah.
Although a new government could.
Yeah.
All right. In India, in Tamil Nadu, transgender candidate Ganga Nayak won a seat in the local urban body. She's 49 and was nominated by the ruling DMK party, where she's been a member for 20 years. She's a social worker, secretary of the South India Transgender Association, and runs a drama troupe that employs 50 members, including 30 transgender people. Other parties also fielded trans candidates, and some of them won.
They have recently banned police harassment of trans people in that area. All right, AIDS news.
Sure.
All right, the big news is that the FDA has approved a condom for anal sex. Now, believe it or not, no previous condom had received official sanction, and so this is a breakthrough, so to speak. Given that the problem.
So this condom is called the One Male Condom, made by Global Protection Corporation. It'll be the only one with this certification.
So that it can be advertised as usable for anal sex.
But other companies are welcome to apply. You have to have under a 5% breakage rate. This one has under a 1% breakage rate.
But all that depends on proper lubricant use.
Oh,
that's
sure.
An important component. Condom use is falling among gay men, and they're hoping that this approval and the ability to advertise it will reverse that trend.
Want to use a water-based lubricant.
Good prop use, Andy. All right, entertainment news. We're trying to get through this to get to our very exciting guest.
Russia has been axed from the Eurovision contest over its stuff after, you know, and that's going to be in Turin, and it won't have the Russians. It's very important to these people over there.
Yeah. Now, you watched the SAG Awards because you're a SAG member. Tell us.
Right, SAG-AFTRA, and out by Ariana DeBose, the first win for an out LGBTQ woman of color, won for Best Supporting Female Actor for her role as Anita in West Side Story. And she's the top favorite for the Oscar as well, and it is a terrific performance. Jessica Chastain won Best Lead Female Actor as Tammy Faye in The Eyes of Tammy Faye.
And didn't like it.
I didn't like it either. But she cited Tammy's eventual support for the LGBTQ community.
I really wanted Gaga to win for House of Gucci. That movie got nothing. Power of the Dog got nothing. Is this a harbinger of the Oscar voting? Then we have our wedding and engagement section. Niecy Nash and Jessica Betts are the first same-sex married couple to appear on the cover of Essence magazine.
Wow.
Congratulations to them. A new wedding, DeBrat and Judy Dupart were married on 2/22/22, a popular wedding date. There they are, and all their finery.
And then reality star Colton Underwood got engaged to political strategist Jordan C. Brown. They've already bought a house together in L.A.
You know, I've been skeptical of things like this. Like, I really didn't think Lance Black and Tom Daley would last, but they've been together for years and have at least one child. So I'm no longer casting aspersions on these celebrity couples that get
It's none
together.
Of our business.
Yeah. Well, that too. I did watch the Netflix movie, So My Grandma's a Lesbian. It turns out to be a Spanish movie. It's a harmless family rom-com. The funniest thing is when one of the grandmas, because two grandmas are getting married, refers to herself as coming out of the wardrobe. And she's corrected. No, it's coming out of the closet. And she says, I'm a woman. It's coming out of the wardrobe. Silly.
And we told you about the fact that the Philadelphia Flyers hockey team had Pride Night and that Mark Siegel, who is also an activist who goes back to the Gay Liberation Front in 1969, there he is doing the face off at the game. I thought it was such a
Version of the puck dropping, because you notice he's standing on a carpet.
Ceremonial.
Yes. But I still like the picture of him with Gritty backstage. That Gritty, the Flyers mascot.
Scary.
You cannot look at him without bursting into laughter. And there he is. There he is with the flag. And the flag with the black and brown stripes, by the way. And just hanging out, leaning on the wall. And Mark in the front, if you can pull back out of that picture, just laughing hysterically. I love
and
that.
And looking a little like Gritty.
I wouldn't say that, but it is one of my favorites.
The whole thing was in fun, but also a tremendous breakthrough for the Flyers.
Recommending on YouTube and linking in our show note, the godmother of rock and roll, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, an early lesbian, semi-closeted icon, independent woman, and was one of the inventors of rock and roll.
A big inspiration for Elvis.
Totally. The new Batman movie is out with Robert Pattinson, and Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman says she plays Catwoman as bisexual, but I suspect that will be only a tiny part of the movie. Jane Lynch is going to be in Funny Girl on Broadway with Beanie Feldstein. And
with a book by Harvey Fierstein.
Yeah, and the Las Vegas Raiders have given $100,000 to the Trevor Project in honor of their out gay player, Carl Nassib. And U.S. Soccer on Friday is going to vote on whether to ban discriminatory chants by fans, as FIFA has done.
Okay.
Take it away.
Let's bring our guest in, our old friend, David Pevsner.
Yo!
Hey!
Hey, guys.
David, we have known David for well over 30 years. When we used to work together at the Hetrick Martin Institute, which you cited in your book. But all right, you are the author of Damn Shame, a memoir of desire, defiance, and show tunes. David is an actor, writer, composer, singer, and sex worker. We've seen him in shows off Broadway like Naked Boys Singing, Party, your own one-man show, Musical Comedy Whore, and When Pigs Fly by the Howard Crabtrees. When Pigs Fly, one of my favorite shows of all time. And we had some pictures there. I hope we get them up. Anyway, and you've done lots of television, lots of movies. Spent a long time on the road with Fiddler on the Roof.
That was a long tour, but it was fun. You know, I kind of was able to... You know, when you do a show like that, your only responsibility is the 3 hours you spend on stage. So
just to set you up, I mean, you have endorsements for your book by Michael Musto, Charles Bush, Brian Batt, Paul Rudnick, and Alan Cumming, who says he loves your journey to zero shame about your body, sexuality, and self.
I want to quote a couple of the ones I like. Felice Picano, who said, he actually does tell all.
That's one of my favorites, too.
And The Guardian, which called the book entertaining, touching, and absolutely filthy.
All right. So, David, you have been bearing it all, literally, for a long time. What more did you want to bear in this book?
Well, you know, I believe having no secrets is a very healthy thing, you know. And as I started to on stage and with my photos and everything, I believe that, you know, when you open your soul to people, people who are maybe either feeling the same way you are or doing the same thing you're doing, it makes people feel not so alone. And that we have common experiences that may not be exactly the same thing, but make us feel the same way. And so I wanted to just, like, leave it on the floor. I wanted to put it all out there. Anything that I was holding back out of shame that I haven't already exposed, I wanted to put it out there because I felt like my story had a resonance to people beyond my own story.
And it is quite a story. You take us on the whole journey from your sort of scared, skinny childhood to your extreme, to your fantasies about doing porn, doing nude photography, all while you're having this Broadway and off-Broadway and TV and film career. And it's just astonishing how open you are in this book. And I was struck today, I was watching The View. And
love those girls.
Well, it's a love-hate relationship. But
I know.
They're talking about their marriages, and someone who wrote a book that included some stuff, and they're all sitting there saying, oh, no, you should never say that stuff out loud. You should never reveal your family stuff or whatever. And I'm thinking, you know, I've just read this book by David, and it is so astonishing how open he is and how raw and how cleansing that is and how freeing and how amazing it would be if we would all live in that kind of truth on a daily basis.
I totally understand people wanting to keep things close to the chest. You know, I totally get it. But there are a lot of conversations that we're not having about sex and nudity and the polarization of sex and ageism. The conversations go only so far. And so for me, what I wanted to do is I wanted to put it all out there, put things on kind of a grander scale of talking about it, so that maybe you go home and consider things a little differently, feel a little more open about it, feel less shame about what's going on in your life. You know, I feel like sometimes you have to make that big, huge step in order for things to come back a little bit on a wider plane. So that's what I tried to do, you know.
So talk about how you had the guts to manifest your fantasies in real life.
I think because I've always, maybe not to my best interest, but always kind of dived into the deep end of things that would maybe blow up in my face. But when it came to these questions about sexuality, about posing nude, about being a male escort, about being a naked maid, you know, about writing stuff that's erotica, which all seem to go so far against the way I was raised as a nice Jewish boy. And the curiosities were just becoming too strong for me to ignore. And as you become an adult, you get the voices out of your head that maybe you don't want to hear. It became a little easier for me to say, that's an opportunity. Like when that ad in HX Magazine came up for maturity escorts, specifically looking for guys who were a little older to be escorts, I went, okay, I'm not going to ignore that. I'm going to try it. I don't have to follow through, but I'm going to try it. And I ended up following through, and it ended up being one of the best jobs I've ever had, and I loved it, and I felt I did it really well.
Yes, so, you said a few escort gigs a week would bring in double what I was bringing in off-Broadway. We have a picture of one of your off-Broadway shows. Let's put the picture up of David in When Pigs Fly, Howard Crabtree's. There he is. Such a fun show.
The best show I've ever been in, absolutely, with a bunch of guys just that were – taught me everything I know about comedy now. They were just the best. I love them.
And more recently, you did a one-man show called Musical Comedy Whore. Tell us about that.
Well, when some of the circumstances that you'll read about in the book happened to me, I kind of wanted to put them on I felt like there was a meaning to it all. And I wanted to put that on page as an artist to kind of tell the story. And I did it as a screenplay originally. almost got it made. But then, having done another one-man show, I thought, you know what? I think I'm ready to stand on a stage and not put it in a movie and say, oh, it's just a, you know, fiction. Stand on a stage and say, I was a male escort, and here's how it affected me, the good and the bad. And so I kind of used my stage knowledge to kind of put it together and workshop it and do everything. And then eventually I did it out here in L.A. I did it various other places. And then we filmed it, which is now available on DVD and streaming.
Right.
You say in the book that doing the escort work was a fantasy of yours, and it turned out to be not what you expected, but more than you hoped.
Well, because I thought, first of all, like, why is this, like, you know, insecure Jewish guy, you know, who may have a body on the outside, but inside was still insecure. Why do I want to do this was the big question. It wasn't just about money. You know, there were things I needed to work out. And originally I thought, well, I don't know if I'm as kind of like cold hearted and kind of slick and sleek. And is my, you know, do I have the attributes that they're supposed to have? So I went to it thinking, well, this will never happen because I'm not the right kind of guy. But what I found out was I absolutely was the right kind of guy for the way I did it, because I'm a caretaker, because I have a sense of humor, because I, you know, there's, I really sense when people are feeling pain or when, you know, erotically things are really charging. I feel like I'm very in touch with that kind of thing. So it ended up working for me gangbusters as an escort.
Although you talk about how it did interfere with one of your longer term relationships. And that's one of the more interesting parts of the book about the back and forth between you and your partner over this, you know, acceptance, not acceptance, distrust, trust.
Well, I mean, more distrust than trust, because he thought, you know, I think from the beginning when we started to go out, he thought I was the kind of person who could be an escort. But what I discovered was that the way I did it, you know, I did it my way. I wasn't the kind of person. You know, maybe I had an escort mentality. To me, that's true. But I did everything once we met, and once I decided to not do it anymore because it was bothering him so much. That was it for me. I'm done. I'm happy to be with you. I'm loving this, you know, being involved in a relationship like this. And he couldn't let it go. He was just really insecure. And to be able to not have the security, the respect and trust between people in a relationship, that is not a relationship. That is not a good recipe for it. And I'm glad that it ended when it did. But it sure did teach me a lot. And it's stuff that I has, you know, carried with me for the good and the bad throughout my entire life since then.
So you put this all out there in this book, but before it in this show, presumably have been open about this for a long time. What kind of reactions do you get from people as they become aware of your story?
Well, for the most part with the book, the reactions I get are thank you, because it's not only about being an escort in the book, but I talk a lot about ageism and I talk a lot about, you know, sex and shame, like shame and ageism and sex and nudity are the themes that run through the entire book. I always tie my story back to those things because they've been such a big issue for me in my life. And what I found out was it's a huge issue for not, I just thought it would speak to people my age, gay guys my age, but no. I'm getting messages from people all over the world, male, female, straight, gay, saying, oh my God, I strangely identify with what you went through. And reading it kind of made me feel not so alone and made me feel better about myself. And maybe I'll try this in bed one night and maybe I'll go buy this thing, you know, whatever. I mean, I want this. I wouldn't tell my story and just stand up and say, hey, look what I did, if I didn't feel like it had some resonance beyond myself. And it seems like it is. So,
well, I do want to take you back to your childhood for what I thought was the most shocking revelation in the book. You went to a Jewish sleepaway camp. You're from Skokie. Where was the camp?
Three Rivers, Michigan.
You had concentration camp day at the camp?
Yep. You know, what's funny about that story, because we did indeed have concentration camp day, which was kind of mortifying. And when I thought about it in the future, I was like, did that really happen? Like, am I just making this up? And my nephew, who's a rabbi, was like, oh, yeah, they used to do that all the time.
It was shocking.
Well, what's funny about that is that I'm working with my editor, Scott Sellers, who is just the greatest. And he's not only is he getting all the stories that made it to the book, but the story that didn't make it to the book. And of all of those stories, the one that he still cannot wrap his head around is the concentration camp day story. It's pretty awful.
It's astonishing. And that's an understatement. Now, you name a lot of names in this book, and I am wondering whether they're real. I just out of curiosity, I wanted to know whether those names were real or not.
I wrote the book with all the real names, knowing that it would just connect me more with the stories I was telling. But when push came to shove, originally, and I asked some people if I could use their real names. But what it came down to is, up until I moved to New York in the book, almost everybody is a pseudonym. Because I am talking about things like sex and shame, I didn't want to necessarily drag the real people's names into my kind of struggle with it. So pretty much those are all pseudonyms. Come New York, I still use some pseudonyms because, again, when you're dealing with sex, I'm very open about it, but not everybody is, although I wish they would be. But I'm not going to force anybody into, like, taking part in my story about some, you know, sex party I was at or whatever. Right. So I kept it. But I do name names as we go on when I felt it was important. And I just was trying to be judicious about it. But Topol and Kirk Cameron and a couple of teachers from Carnegie Mellon don't get away so clean.
they deserve to be named. Now, we know you from many years ago because you did come volunteer at the Hetrick Martin Institute and work with us on going out into the schools to tell your life story as a gay man.
Well, not all your life story.
Very expurgated. So how was that? You know, I found it an incredible experience and a great gift to be able to go out and do that. And it built a lot of self-esteem for me and got me over a lot of shame. And I wonder what the experience was like for you.
Exactly that. I mean, first I was nervous about it because I wasn't used to standing in front of, I'm out, I've always been out, but it's weird kind of standing in front of people and saying, I'm gay, when you know that you don't necessarily have, you know, an audience that's going to go, yay, you know. But what I found was from beginning to end of that workshop, no matter where they started at the beginning, because we would walk into places that were, you know, hardly progressive, and we would kind of, I remember not, you know, kind of just giving out information and talking about stuff without coming out as gay. And then at about a third of the way through, you and Andy and I, we would say, you know, and that's how I feel as a gay man, or that's how I feel as a lesbian. And you could hear a pin drop because we have done nothing so far to fulfill their stereotype of who we are. You know, we're just people talking about stuff.
Right.
And that pin drop moment to me was like sex. It was just so wonderful and terrific, and it fulfilled me so much because then their thinking started to change and they started to ask really constructive questions. And I feel like we left them better at the end and more, if not progressive, more empathetic than before.
Down to our last 30 seconds. So we've just scratched the surface on the book. Anything else you want to let people know about it?
Just that it's beyond telling my story. It's a funny book. I think it's funny. It's relatable, especially if you lived in New York in the 80s and 90s. But even if you didn't, I thought it was a niche book, and it's not. It's for everybody.
And that's
above a certain age.
Thank you, David Pebner. Damn Shame is the book, and great to see you again.
So good to see you guys. Thank you.
Bye.